Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Mail order at the time was your sometimes your only option. And you took a leap of faith. There was no, tracking your package.
Hey there, it's Jim Lenihan here on Rockin' the Suburbs. This is about all you're going to hear from me today because we are in the middle of Punk Weeks with your guest hosts, Paul Hayden and Vasanth Ramamurthy. And today the guys are going to talk about SoCal, Southern California punk. All right, guys, take it away.
Now we're going to move into Los Angeles, 1980 to 1985. And I'm going to start with self-titled debut from The Adolescents. Now, in my opinion, they stayed just on the right side of the punk hardcore divide. You know, they played not too fast, but not too slow. And they were really catchy songs. And the musicianship was really solid. Now, guitarist Rick Agnew and drummer Casey Royer had played in bands previously and were, considered seasoned veterans in the scene. And once they joined up with the other guys, the band really, really came together. And what's notable about this album, that's one of the first hardcore albums to receive national distribution through Frontier Records, went on to sell over 10,000 copies, which was just behind the Dead Kennedys' Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables. And it should be noted that it was nearly impossible to hear these bands on the radio. I mean, unless you had access to college radio, and even then, maybe it was from midnight to four or something like that. And it was also pretty tough to find their records in your average store. I don't know what the malls were stocking back then, but I'm guessing probably not The Adolescents. And mail order at the time was your sometimes your only option. And you took a leap of faith. There was no, tracking your package. It was like you'd send off a money order or cash to somewhere in New York, or I think I remember ordering from I think it was Disorder. I think they were based out of San Francisco. Midnight Records had their mail order out of New York City. And I was reading Trouser Press. So you'd go to the back where the classifieds were and you'd see who had what. And you took a leap of faith and sent your money off. And I'd say for the most part it worked. But, it was just a different time. And I will say this, when you waited that long and it finally arrived, that was a big deal. That was a good day. But back to The Adolescents, I'd say their two most famous songs would be Kids of the Black Hole and Amoeba. And these are just great rock and roll songs. That to call them punk songs might be to not give them enough credit. I mean, these are also certainly, maybe not perfect pop, but they're just great. They're just great songs, period.
We are scientists in our lab, looking through the microscope. The little glass sides, they never lie. How can this fall my code? I've never seen anything like it before. This amoeba's got a mind of its own. But don't turn your back to stupid science world. This is reaching for the telephone. body knows it's a lie.
Yeah, I agree. Those would be my two picks as well. Kids of the Black Hole is interesting as well because it's like five minutes long. It's sort of the sort of hypnotizing sort of guitar riff that goes on for that length. But yeah, iconic album cover. Sometimes called the Blue Album, not to be confused with the Weezer one. But yeah, very striking graphic design on that cover. But yeah, this is also a more of a one that I got into, in adulthood, not necessarily when I was in younger in college. So because it's more of a, how do I describe it? It's not like the first sort of most popular, band from this era, I guess.
I mean, and I'm curious as to how you came across some of these things because, now it's really great that there is access to just about everything if you want to hear it, but you still need a place to start. And, there's no shortage of, best punk rock albums of all time or the 80s or whatever. But I think a lot of these, you're not going to find on those lists, and that's why we're kind of bringing them up and trying to give them a little bit, make some, create some awareness for these titles.
And this album is also sort of a, I would say, early seed for like the punk pop that came about later in the 90s and 2000s. Definitely this sort of Southern California punk was, heavily influential in later Green Day, Blink 182, stuff like that.
All right, Vasant, what do you got for us?
I'm gonna go with Black Flag's My War album. I think most people have probably at least heard the stuff from the Damage album, the previous one, like Rise Above and TV Party and stuff like that. But I like this one the best out of the Black Flag albums. It was released in 1984, which was a extremely prolific period for the band. They put out three albums that year because they basically had some legal problems the previous couple of years where they couldn't release anything. So they just had this huge backlog of material to put out. So My War is sort of unique in that the side A is sort of more their usual faster paced punk stuff.
My war, you're one of them who fade. That you're my friend, but you're one of them. You don't want to see me there. You don't want me to give. Cause you're one of them. My war, you're one of them who fade. That you're my friend, but you're one of them. Them.
Side B is kind of this a slower, sludgier Black Sabbath influenced sound. It's literally only like three songs on Side B, which takes up, you know, the majority of the side. It was very polarizing at the time, in the punk scene. Like, people who were into the more faster paced hardcore did not like this change of direction at all for Black Flag. And Henry Rollins frequently has talked about how when they were touring this period, they just got completely, you know, spit on, harassed, attacked and stuff for by the audience, just for, like, you know, what they're doing. They grew their hair long, Rollins did, and Greg Ginn as well. So just a big change in the scene with this band. This sort of change in sound was a big influence on the Seattle bands. People from the Melvins, Green River, Soundgarden have all talked about seeing Black Flag play Seattle on this My War tour and how it changed their whole perspective. Like, the Melvins basically were a sort of faster-paced hardcore band, and after they saw this My War show, they, like, changed into what the Melvins are, you know, more the slower, sludgier, metal-influenced band. And obviously, you know, Soundgarden, you can hear the influence there. So yeah, so that's my pick, is My War.
Yeah, good choice, because you know the influence here is pretty incredible. If I'm not mistaken, wasn't Greg Ginn kind of a metal guy, like into Sabbath and that kind of
Yeah, he liked
stuff?
that. He's also a Deadhead, which is people may not know, and a big pot smoker. So yeah.
Okay, because I do remember the controversy, and you know, the original fans, yeah, were definitely disappointed, and I think some of them were like, "Well, I'm gonna wait and see," and then the next album comes out, and it's like, no, it's not going back to a TV party or a six pack. It's you know, they're doing their own thing, and I will say this: you cannot pull this off without, you know, really meaning it. And Henry Rollins, you could argue some of his best vocals are on this album, because he is
Yeah.
not. I mean, it's just like there's no in between. You know,
Right.
he's feeling it, and definitely an important record, and one that's gonna, like you said, with the Seattle scene. And yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, the Seattle scene was a little isolated too
Right.
at the time, because they weren't, you know, probably what, San Francisco would be the closest, you know,
Yeah, a
big
lot of bands
city
didn't even
to.
make it up there. To
Yeah.
Seattle a lot of times, but yeah, I meant to note it down, but I didn't. I agree that this is Rollins' best vocal performance. Just like getting into his singing and the way he screams on the songs inside too. Yeah, it's a strong performance.
So we'll go from the intensity of Black Flag to something a little lighter, but certainly not soft by any means. Agent Orange, their album Living in Darkness, and they were also from Southern California, and they had been part of the early punk scene. And their claim to fame is that they combined surf music with punk. You know, there were dashes of, you could say, heavy metal, and you could hear kind of like surf, heavy metal, and the Sex Pistols, if you wanted to do a quick description of what they sounded like. And the singer guitarist Mike Palm, he felt that, the rise of punk would allow him to kind of give him permission, so to speak, to consolidate these sounds into a new band. Like he'd have the freedom, people would be open-minded enough to listen. And so in 1980, they released a single, Bloodstains. At the ear of Rodney Bingenheimer and his popular radio show, Rodney on the Rock, I think it is. And in 1981, they put together an album, Living in Darkness, and came out on Poshboy Records. And another thing I'd like to throw out there is how important these local labels were. I mentioned Frontier with the Adolescents, Black Flags on SST. These labels were really important in terms of, once they had a success with a band, they would, kind of take that profit and pour it into the label to try to get the next band and keep it going. So that's not just like, SST is Black Flag. It's more than that. So Posh Boy had a good amount of bands on their label. I believe the Social Distortion, their first single might have been on Posh Boy. I could be wrong, but
Okay, I'm not
anyway,
sure.
the other thing that's interesting about this album is it really struck a chord with the skating community. So one other great example of the band kind of expanding the punk palette, and I'd say if there was a song that would kind of epitomize Agent Orange, it'd be their cover of Pipeline. The old
Yeah.
surf song by the Shantays.
Right. And they covered Miserlou as well. This is well before it was used in Pulp Fiction, so they were deep surf fans.
It's interesting. You'd think it's kind of limited, because surf music is hard to do like more than just kind of the basic stuff. But they made a couple albums out of it, and they mixed it up. It wasn't all surf. I think that's to their credit. Some of the songs on Living in Darkness are just good punk rock songs. So maybe we can get Craig Rosen to chime in. I think he was a skater. And he can tell us if Agent Orange was big when he was doing that.
Right.
All right, son, what do you got for us next?
I have The Descendants, I Don't Want to Grow Up, which is their second record, released in 1985. Came out in SST. Well, originally came out on New Alliance Records, which is the Minutemen's label, but then later that got absorbed in SST, and SST put it out again. So this is their second album. This is the second album with Bill Stevenson as drummer. The first one that we just talked about was about Black Flag. He was the drummer on My War. But this is his pulling double duty in the Descendants as well. So the Descendants' first album was called Milo Goes to College, which sort of has that iconic cover art of the drawing of Milo bespectacled. That's a good album. It's not my favorite of theirs. It's pretty their usual. If you know the Descendants, the songs about like coffee and food and girls and stuff. And this album, it starts out like that a little bit. There's a like a Descendants theme song kind of starting out, and then there's the song Pervert, which is about Milo being like perpetually interested in sex and stuff. And then but I think so you start out listening to, you think, oh, it's just going to be sort of the same thing as Milo Goes to College. But then I think track five is really where this album just completely takes flight for me. Like every song after this is just like one after the other is just amazing. You have like Good Clean Fun, you got Christmas Vacation, you got Ace. My World, just like song after song, they were just like insane on this album. So then you have In Love This Way, which is vaguely sort of as like a country-ish shuffle on that one. I think like we mentioned for the Adolescent, this was also the Descendants are huge on like Green Day and Blink-182 and all the sort of California punk pop. So I'm not the biggest fan actually of that sort of the California sort of Epitaph Records and NOFX and Fat Records and all that kind of stuff. It's not my favorite genre of punk, but like I do love the Descendants. So yeah, this is my favorite album of theirs. I Don't Want to Grow Up.
Yeah, I think the Descendants were imp really important in there. They're one of those bands that kind of created the genre and then spawned so many imitators that you can be excused for not following up on every single one of them, because, like you said, there were just so many. But they really expanded the zone. I'm looking at the track listing here, and it's almost like My War, where first side is kind of what you expected, second side is this is where we're going, and Come Along, if you will. But yeah, Silly Girl and Love This Way, Christmas Vacation. Jeez, I mean, it's just loaded.
Yeah, if those don't get stuck in your head, I mean, come on.
Right. And then they've really almost always been around in some form or another. I think All, was that the band that
Yeah, All was after Milo left. They basically continued with the different lead singers and stuff. But yeah, they're still active. Descendants are very much touring and putting out albums still.
I was going through my collection and going through my Descendants, and there was something called Ninth and, was it Ninth and
Ninth and
Chestnut or
Walnut,
something?
Ninth and
Ninth and
Walnut,
Walnut. That's really, really good. I think the story was it was songs they had demoed or something back in the day, and then
early
mixed them
record,
up.
very early recordings,
Yeah, and it sounded great. So we're going to wrap up the 80 to 85 LA with a few honorable mentions. The band X, which I'm sure people have heard about, their first album, Los Angeles, is really, really important. Pretty much a greatest hits, produced by Ray Manzarek of the Doors, on the Slash label, another really important record label from that time. They went on to, put out three more great records, in my opinion. And their embrace of kind of like the 50s rockabilly and the male female vocals and kind of the poetic lyrics. I mean, this was a really great band, and you could do worse than start with Los Angeles.
Love this album for sure.
And then more of an important piece than I'd say great record would be the Germs, GI. I mean, I know they have their fans, but listening to it in one sitting, particularly the last song, which is like almost 10 minutes of just kind of the same thing over and over, it's a bit much. But when they were on, and when Darby Crash could get his act together, they were pretty powerful. But I think his demons or whatever you want to call it got the best of him, and they live on more in like a mythology than actual, quality of music, but it's certainly an important band.
I don't think you can argue with the first couple of singles like Lexicon Devil and Forming and stuff. But yeah, the first album, this album, GI was produced by Joan Jett. But yeah, you could argue some they didn't fully live up to their potential, maybe.
Right, and then perhaps they had more time. And who knows what happened, but didn't Pat Smear play guitar
Pat
for them?
Smear. Yeah, it's the Germs guitarist. That's right.
And then last but certainly not least, and kind of the inspiration of the theme of our podcast here, our episode is the Minutemen, Double Nickels on the Dime. Sat very cleverly picked on the picked out the lyric from History Lesson Part
Part
Two.
two. Yep.
Punk rock changed our lives, and so that album, for obvious reasons, I'm sure everybody's heard of it, but can't understate how important it was to release a double album in 1984. with I don't know how many 40 some songs, and talk about one of the most unpunk rock things to do, but they did it. And I believe, was it also the same, was it the same day that Zen
No,
Arcade,
okay, I think, yeah,
or similar,
somewhere very
or
close
very,
timeline, yeah.
yeah. But Husker Du will be coming up later. But the Minutemen, again, in terms of their, owning New Alliance, or creating a record label, New Alliance. And I gotta believe that they were, I mean, they were part of that, Our Band Could Be Your Life book, always very supportive of the community, always wanting to give back. Even to this day, you feel like, Mike Watt's out there doing whatever. He also seems like the kind of guy you could just walk up to and say, "Hey, how you
Yep.
doing? I really like your music." And he'd be like, "Oh, that's awesome.
I
Let's have a
did. I did
beer." Did
that.
you? Oh.
I saw him in 1998, I think, maybe when he was touring with for the Contemplating the Engine Room solo album. So yeah, I saw him in a small club in St. Louis, and I had one like a promotional poster or something for the show, and had him sign it and said, thanks for the music and all that. And he said his usual, much respect the way he does to everybody. So yeah. That was fun.
Awesome.
And that was part four of the punk series. Tomorrow, the guys will talk about Northern California punk. It's Rockin' the Suburbs, and we will, or they will, talk to you tomorrow.